Hello and welcome back to season two of The Platinum Rule. We are a news update and political science playground for policies and spotlights on current things happening that can affect you or indirectly impact your neighbors.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Platinum Rule. My name is Amari.
Hi.
And I have Sophia here with me, per usual. Thank you all for tuning in. Sophia, how have you been?
So my weekend was good. A little before last week's episode, right up to this past weekend, I was in Texas visiting my parents at their new home. They're actually enjoying the snow out there today, so that's super cool. I enjoyed my week with them so much. It's been so needed. My family and I haven't got together. It's my dad, my mom, my sister, and I. We have not all been together in one place since the July of 2020. So it was something very special to have us all in one place under one roof, eating dinner together, not through FaceTime. So I will cherish that forever. But on my way there, I actually saw signs in the Orange County airport that warned about coronavirus and COVID, and of course, you know, just precautionary measures and stuff like that, which I liked. What I did not like, and it made me think, I don't know if this should be addressed, is the pictures of China that were used as the backgrounds for all of these warnings. And my thought was, yes, I know that this virus originated in Wuhan, China. We all know this. We all know this. This coronavirus has taken over our lives for the past 12 months. I don't think anyone's forgotten where it's come from. One thing I will say, though, is I don't think it's right to create the label and association COVID China, because what happens with that is a prejudice against people from China. That's what that births. And with the rising racially targeted attacks to Asian Americans specifically, I just wanted to address this and make sure to remind everyone to stick up for something when it's wrong. Little things like this. And I know some of you listening might think, okay, it's just a background in a paper.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but now I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes, it's disgusting how we blame, even as a joke, it's disgusting how we blame an entire population for the mistakes or the decisions of a few people. So to create the rhetoric that China created this virus, or in layman's terms, in horrific terms, the China virus, is just disgusting. It needs to stop. If you know anyone that says things like that, please tell them that that's absolutely not true. And if anything, the practices that they have in Wuhan, China are way more ethical and cleanly and respective of their citizens than America. Because guess what? Guess who has coronavirus and guess who doesn't? So the fact that only our disgusting nation can't figure it out says more about us than it does about Wuhan. Like, really? We can't. Not in airports, not in government buildings.
If a disease came out of Mexico and I started seeing Mexico backgrounds under warnings as a background for warning signs, that makes me feel uneasy, especially in a time of the increased attacks. It was just something I wanted to address. That was a thought that I had flying this past weekend. Aside from spending great time with family, how was your weekend?
My weekend was fine. If you guys are into cooking, there's this Instagram called Last Supper Society. They partnered up with Sack Food and Booze, and I won one of their dinner giveaways. So I spent Valentine's Day cooking. It was so nice. And I was, you know, I was alone, which is fine. And that definitely made, you know, the time go by quickly and made me super happy. So, yeah.
You guys, Amari in the kitchen is seriously no joke. This girl can cook. Take us into this week's episode, Chef Mars.
As we all know, February is Black History Month, and it's the month that the United States recognizes Black excellence. It's also a time to reflect on the horrific past of Black Americans and everything that they've had to endure. Instead of giving you all a long history lesson ourselves, we're going to leave that to the professionals.
We just wanted to take the time to acknowledge a couple media sources and people that we admire and encourage all of you to check them out for yourself. We know how important it is to know our history, so hopefully these resources can help spark some interest. I feel like I've taken breaks, and that's really privileged to say, of all the scrolling and resources that I can take in. However, these accounts really make it easier and kind of just like digestible to scroll through. So one of the first accounts that I have up is called Change, and it's without the A, Change on Instagram. Very informational. It's the account of a sustainable fashion brand, actually, but they have so many messages on their directly on their clothing itself, and they have a lot of that embedded into their social platforms. They also have a newsletter. They're always looking to donate and secure profits to go towards something. So 10 out of 10 recommend them. They'll hit you with something that touches the soul every once in a while. It's good. Miss Pack Yeti, her name's Brittany Packnett Cunningham. Her at name is MS Pack, P-A-C-K, Yeti, Y-E-T-T-I. She is an activist, educator, and writer. She actually has her own podcast called Undistracted. Make sure you check that out if you would like to hear directly from voices of color that are the professionals. So definitely going to recommend her podcast. And then the last one I wanted to mention, and I'm realizing they're all women, woo-woo, women in the house, Janae the Future. And she goes by Futurist Organizer Storyteller. She tells it like it is in a very insightful way. It's not always going to be what you want to hear, but it definitely provokes thought and action within yourself. So those are my top recs for the month.
Perfect. As most of you know, I love TikTok, so I'm going to give you guys a couple TikTok account suggestions. The first account I want to highlight is Jordan Simone. She's a 22-year-old Black American woman who makes amazing videos about all different subject matters. Although her main focus is Black history and current events, she's also an amazing makeup artist. So for every Black history video that she's made this month, she also took inspiration from Black makeup artists and shared her version of their most popular makeup looks on her own account. Her at is JORDXN.SIMONE if anyone is interested in Black history and or beauty. The next account I wanted to highlight is a friend of mine. His name is Chris Deer. He is an educator, an author, and lives in NOLA. His TikToks are very thorough, but he also teaches full history lessons in 60 seconds. He shares American history, Black history, South American history, and much more. So if any of you want to check out his page, it is at CMDLA.
Amari has shared some of his TikToks with me, and it's quite impressive to squeeze in that much information in that short of time. We will put everyone's at names in our description. We just wanted to share those for Black History Month, which I'm glad we got to share. I think when we think of injustices that occur for people of color, especially Black people, a lot of people's minds jump to segregation, Martin Luther King, some people think slavery.
The reality is that it is still occurring, just in more subtle ways. I'll let you decide what's more dangerous when you have a moment to think about it. With that, though, Amari, kick us off.
So we're going to move on to our headliner segment. And this week, we tried to make all of our headliners reflect BHM in some way.
To start, Biden is working on a racial equity plan and has already started signing executive orders for those who have been historically underserved, marginalized, and adversely affected by persistent poverty and inequality. The goal of this is to recognize and work to redress the policies and or programs, or lack of, rather, that serve as a barrier to equal opportunity. The ultimate goal being to create a step in providing everyone opportunity to reach their full potential. I was going to go into definitions of what underserved communities were defined by in this exec order, and I was also going to jump into what the kind of process looks like in doing this. However, after talking between Amari and I, we decided that that would take away from one of the main things that we wanted to emphasize in this exec order. That's actually a huge step for people of color and specifically Black people in the month of Black history. So with that, dive right into something more progressive about this exec order.
Yes, everything that Sophia said is like right on, 100%. And one of the executive orders that we were discussing includes the Department of Justice not renewing its contracts with private prisons.
As some of you may know, due to the privatization of the prison system, criminal justice figures are more inclined to convict individuals to generate more revenue. So more people convicted equals more money, money, money for the prison itself. This imposes significant costs on society and communities, while private prisons get to profit off federal prisoners. Not to mention, most of these conditions are less safe for prisoners and correctional officers alike.
And then one other thing that I just wanted to say is that is also why you see certain areas where people of color are living are policed at a higher rate than areas that what we call suburbs. So this is a really big deal. So also on the subject of racial equality, I'm not sure if I discussed this on the podcast yet, but California Governor Gavin Newsom has made a historical push for reparations in California. It was announced late last year that he signed a bill addressing reparations in the state. The bill will provide funding to build a task force that will research how and what goes into reparations. We have seen these types of task forces being put together domestically and internationally for other groups, so it will be interesting to see how California spearheads this effort, and as always, we will keep you guys updated.
One thing I have to say about that, reparations. What does reparations look like to you?
It would be like a long.
I saw a YouTube video that asked like 100 black people, what do reparations look like for you? Some were serious answers, some were funny. I just think it's a good question to pose on underserved communities. What does reparations look like to you? I'm just curious how you define years of being marginalized
and targeted.
I just want to know how you go about finding reparations. And I really am interested to see what those task force teams look like. Sometimes I think the things that they come up with sound so progressive. However, I want a breakdown of what that includes. I'm really interested to see what the task force is made of. And while we're honoring underserved communities, that is the Black community during Black History Month, it is also important to acknowledge in the current events of targeted Asian American attacks. The other exec orders that have been signed address the discrimination of housing practices and fighting the xenophobia against Asian Americans, which has been heightened during the pandemic. Seems like a perfect time to mention that as well.
Mm-hmm. Next, a bill has been introduced that would make DC the 51st state of the nation. As you can tell, I'm really excited about this. For the 700,000 plus citizens that have been taxed without representation, this is a huge win, especially because the area of DC and DMV as a whole is a majority Black. And to put things into perspective for people who might be wondering why this is important, Vermont and Wyoming both have populations that are hundreds and thousands less than DC, and DC is not considered a state. So, just
crazy
food for thought.
Crazy. This also means that DC will have two senators along with House representatives. That could be a wonderful addition to Congress. Catch next week's episode, where we're actually going to take a deep dive into the statehood hurdles DC faces while on the brink of a historic opportunity.
Yes, very excited for next week. Make sure you guys tune in. Okay, this is probably our last headliner of the episode. Some of you may remember Eugene Goodman, who was the Black officer that warded off the terrorists from Congress people inside the Capitol building during the insurrection. Some of you may know him as the guy that was waving his arms back and forth and then running away from the mob and then stopping them, and then kind of like baiting them to go in a different direction. He had the honor to walk with Kamala Harris during the inauguration and is now being awarded.
Nancy Pelosi announced that Congress will be honoring the Capitol Police with congressional gold medals, which is the highest honor Congress can give. Eugene received his last week, which is great to see this come full circle. On another note, gold medals, woo. So glad Congress can honor the police, but not the root of the problem of how the riot occurred.
Yeah, I can't even think about that. So now we are going to move on and introduce a new segment.
This segment will consist of a listener calling in to Anchor and leaving us a voicemail. Once we get the voicemail, we will answer whatever question is asked on the podcast. If you would like to be anonymous, that's not a problem. Just let us know when you dial in.
We will put the voicemail link and our Platinum Roll email address in our link tree and the description of this episode. And if y'all just want to send your voice recordings to us directly, that's totally fine. We really encourage you all to do this because we can answer exactly what you guys want to know. So be a little more interactive.
You have one new message. Message received.
Hi, my name is Rachel, and thanks for taking my question. I am most interested in reparations for Black Americans. Most other ethnic groups that have been disenfranchised in the U.S. have already received reparations, most common referred to the Japanese and their reparations. And I'd just like to get your thoughts and your opinions on how reparations could or should be applied to Black Americans in the U.S. today.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for calling in and submitting that question. We played your voicemail after recording this episode. It was on our last thing of to-dos. She is asking the same question, I'm wondering, and I'm sure a lot of other people are too. What do reparations look like? It's not my place. I don't know. And I'm truly, truly, and that's why I asked Amari earlier, curious about what reparations look like.
Yes. Okay. So I had, 10 minutes to think about, what I was going to say. And we're just going to puncture the fourth wall. That was my mom, you guys. I didn't listen to what she said before she recorded it. So I'm just like laughing that it was so aligned with kind of what we were talking about. Okay. Reparations. So reparations is basically a subsidy of some kind that could be given to an oppressed population. Is that the Google definition? No. But in my head, that is what I am, taking it as. So in other countries like Germany, they chose to erase all Nazi history from their land, teach and reinforce how that history has negatively impacted their nation. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to monetary reparations, I cannot tell you if, people in the Jewish population or people in the Jewish population in Germany have received money, monetary forms of reparation. That I do not know. But I know for a fact that they have stripped the land of the history of Nazis and have also reinforced the education. Now, we could say, in America, we've done that too in America. So, that's reparations. But at the same time, you have 71 million people who don't like that they're taking away racist memorabilia. They don't like that people are being taught, not only in the workplace, but in schools, that behavior, that way of thinking, and those generalizations are bad, evil, and negatively impact an entire group of people. We have so many people in our nation, our age, older than us, grandparents, great parents, that feel like reparations aren't necessary.
Or that they've already been done, which is nuts to think.
Or that they've already been done because we are quote unquote equal, and I guess to them, equal is not being enslaved. So for me, I would like to get, a monthly stimmy from the government as reparations. That would be cool. Can we get the president of the United States to not write an executive, former president of the United States, write an executive order that takes away racial inequality practices in the workplace? He removed that from all national government agency onboarding practices. He tried to get rid of those trainings because it makes white people uncomfortable to talk about all the horrible stuff that's happened. They don't want to think about it. So before we I mean, yes, reparations, let's get it moving. Like, we're a few hundred years too late. But, like, can we get people to recognize all of the horrific things that happened? And not just slavery. Like, everything.
It's modern day. It's right in front of our faces without even knowing. Do you know that adopting, if you wanted to adopt a child right now, a white child is more expensive than any other color? Black, Asian, Mexican. It's right under our noses, folks. It's not gone. We still have Confederate statues that were, I'm sorry, barely dismantled and taken down by the people last year. A few months ago.
Illegally dismantled at that.
There's plenty of reparations that collectively we could come up with, I'm sure. Yeah, I think that's why I posed the question earlier, and I'm glad it came up again right now. Thanks, Rachel. I think that we didn't really have a sec to sit with our thoughts and think about it. Yeah, but we're two new girls from 10 minutes ago. I'm glad you asked that again, because I think we were ready this time.
I definitely thought about it, especially because literally 5 minutes ago before we started recording this, I was talking about housing policy, which I won't get into, even though I could. I won't get into it. But it definitely, you know, made me think about, wow, like, so many other nations and groups have figured out a way to strip their country of the rhetoric. And right. To say that the United States has done anything comparable to that, when the wrongdoings maxed out. I mean, I'm not a numbers girl, but I would like to tally up all of the years that people in other countries, or even the United States of people of different races, how many years they were oppressed, and compare it to American slavery. I want to add all of them up from all over the world, and then compare it to American history, American Black history, and see how much more the entire world has oppressed their own people compared to our one nation. And people think that Black people don't deserve reparations. Like,
right.
Other thing that when this conversation comes up, what people discuss is, well, you know, there's illegal child labor and there's unfair treatment of women. Like, women can't even have driver's license or have jobs, and comparing it to different groups, marginalized groups, which is all horrific. It would be hard to say that one is more horrific than the other. But when you are taking an entire group and you are spreading this negative rhetoric around the world because of the way one group treated this one group in this country. Like, if I go to Ireland or Switzerland, they're going to treat me differently, not because of Black Ireland people, because of the way white people treated Black Americans in America. They're going to treat me differently, not because the Black people there did something to them that created this rhetoric in their head. That is an issue. And it all stems from, of course, European centricism, but also for how long this hasn't been addressed in our own nation. If we can't address it and accept it, why would anyone else in the world address it or try to change?
Right. I've never thought of it from that way.
Black Americans worked for free for years. And not 2 years, not 10 years, 4 years, 4 decades, 4 generations.
Recent generations.
So to compare that to any other marginalized group, let's not and say we did, because we don't want to compare. We just want it to be addressed, and we want to see a change.
Yeah. Comparison's just distraction at this point. It just needs to be addressed.
Just needs to be addressed as its own entity and not shied away from. Oh, you think it's sad? Imagine living in it. Imagine experiencing it.
Yeah. I recently watched a movie with my parents called The Butler. 10 out of 10 recommend to everyone that has not watched that film. If you have, it's a good refresher, especially if you feel you haven't really connected with Black History Month. You don't need Black History Month to watch this movie. Very great movie, and it really ties into how recent lots of people, I think, when they think of Black History Month and they think of reparations or they think of, they push it. Nothing like that exists. You know, we don't have separate restaurants. It's just all very sneakily in how we function day to day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no restaurants with labels black and white. There are redlining policies, though, that if you really took a look at it, really do kind of follow the same structure of black and white, Latino. So definitely a good movie to watch. Really just puts into perspective of the bigger timeline that is people's struggles and being marginalized and being targeted. It's not long ago. It's actually still current and very present in today's society. That's going to be your guys' homework for the week. Watch The Butler. I believe I watched it on Amazon Prime. The best part about it is you feel human experience. I can picture, as a Latina, I can picture my grandparents working on farms when they were younger. It's really hard for me to be able to truly, honestly, wholeheartedly put myself in the shoes of someone who knows that their grandparents were wrongfully taken from their homes, put on a farm, had to watch abuse to not only themselves but all their loved ones in a place that they did not choose, while also being unpaid, taken advantage of, had to run away to find new life, and then forced to accommodate themselves in a society that was never really set up for them to succeed. And all while at the same time having to listen to the rhetoric that it never happened like that, we're way past that, everyone has equal opportunity now, equality is here. That is not true at all. If you haven't had the chance to do that in this month, I hope that I was able to just walk you through that. So in the month of Black History Month and moving forward, I would like everyone to still have that same mind frame of being able to put yourself in that place, in experience of Black people.
So not to go onto my own personal spirituality, you know, and mental health bias, but if anyone has the time, Google generational trauma. Just right. Google it. Read it for yourself what it is. And think about the hundreds of years of generational trauma that, on top of all of the physical aspects people had to endure, how it affects their lives today in 2021. Just Google generational trauma. You won't even have to put the word black or black people or black Americans. Just read the definition of generational trauma and mm-hmm. think about that's impact on daily life.
I'm going to Google that as soon as we're off this call. So thank you for suggesting that. But I think that was one of the main aspects that I did not get to see previously in action. I got to see that through watching that movie. Mm-hmm. That was one thing that I was like, dang. Like,
people forget.
Struggles not only from other groups of people, but struggles from parents to children who may have opposing views on how to conquer really a common enemy. How do you handle having a different viewpoint from the people that you are struggling with?
And then the other thing, what that kind of like ties into the generational trauma thing and like movies and interpretations like The Butler, people will say, well, you have Beyonce. You have Michael Jordan. You can't possibly be oppressed. It's like, it's not about that, though. Think about all of these other aspects that go into the struggle. Not that they're people that were strong and brave and courageous enough to power through and still become billionaires with all of the cards stacked against them. That's one thing. But to think about the generational trauma that just the average poor American and poor Black American has gone through due to everything that this country has done to oppress a certain group. And it's not woe is me, it's factual research. No one's making this up for fun or to be a victim.
And I'm sure even the most elite, the Beyoncés, the Michael Jordans, the John Legends, I'm sure they have stories of their own. Mm-hmm. Of before they made it, mm-hmm. even on their regular days of not being in full uniform and all glammed up. I'm sure they have their own personal stories of someone mistaken their identity and really tried it that day.
Mm-hmm. We could probably find some stuff on that. I know Jay-Z, he uses his platform to discuss it a lot. And just through his lyrics.
Any other thoughts?
Yes, I just wanted to say, please do not mistake my passion for anger. I am very lucky to be an American citizen, and I'm very lucky for all of the opportunities that I'm able to experience as an American, and I love you guys. No harsh feelings, just very passionate.
What she said. So thank you guys. We'll be back next week with our episode on D.C., and it's Road
to Statehood.
To Statehood. DC and the Road to Statehood.
And with that, we just wanted to say thank you guys for returning and tuning in. We'll be back next Tuesday.
As we'd like to emphasize, we're just here to spark something for everyday people who do everyday things that have the magic to make differences everywhere.
With that being said, if you're feeling in the mood, please choose to share this episode, leave us a review, and follow us on Instagram if you don't already at Platinum Rule Podcast.
Bye.